Good morning. Welcome to the Roundtable for this Wednesday, the 27th of March. It's very nice to have you with us, and hopefully you're having a great day. And I hope we don't do anything to screw that up. So that's all we're going to try to do this morning. We've got a lot to talk about. We have a wonderful panel. I made an error in the beginning. I was introducing the panel, and I said that Alan was going to be on today. And because Sarah said, oh, you know, Alan's not on today. And I said, oh, and she said, do you want me to take it off the script? And I said, no, I'm a broadcast professional. I'll be able to riff on the fly. And then I screwed it up.
And that, listeners, is accountability.
That
in
is
action.
Absolutely. And then Alan called up and was like, I'm not on the air today. I said, I screwed that up. I'm sorry, but he'll be back on Friday. All right, we have a wonderful panel. Let me introduce everybody to you. Berkshire Eagle reporter Jen Smith is with us. Good morning, Jen. How are you?
I'm very well. And yourself?
Excellent.
Now?
I'm fine. Thank you. Very nice to have you here. Former New York State Senator, SUNY New Paltz Communications Professor Terry Gibson is with us. Good morning, Terry.
Morning. Thanks for being here. I'll do my best not to make any mistakes either.
Well, yeah, you don't. You can make mistakes, just, you know.
No. No mistakes today.
Yeah, no mistake Wednesday. And Times Union columnist Chris Churchill is back. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
It's been a long time. We love having you here.
Well, I'm glad to be back.
It's great to have you here.
And
thank
I'm
you
sure
very
I will
much.
Make a mistake.
if you make a mistake, just do it in Chicago and they'll drop all the charges.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be that hour. Kind of morning, folks.
We'll get to that later. Let's talk about what is happening in the news, and we'll talk about the Democrats on health care. So you'll recall yesterday we were talking about how the Trump Justice Department was moving ahead with a plan to completely abolish the Affordable Care Act, and that is what they came up with. Then, so now the word is the Democrats say, oh, well, this is an opening for us. We can come in and start talking about this issue because we feel that this is a good issue for us. And so the discussions have begun, and it seems, as we talked about yesterday, a lot of this seems that maybe it will just ultimately end up in court, as it has in the past. The president has come out in some conflicting statements as to what would stay, what would go, and now the whole thing is to be scrapped under the plan that was announced on Monday. There was some question as to whether that was. It seems that there were many Republican lawmakers who were surprised that the president made that proclamation on Monday. I don't know why you would be surprised at this point, but apparently they were. And so then we're dealt with that issue. So who would like to begin as we talk about health care?
Well, I you know, none of these maneuvers are surprising, I think, because, again, it's about saving face and staying relevant. I mean, it definitely is a good opportunity for the Democrats, which many of them who are in the current session ran on that platform. So it does them a world of good. But, you know, can they make a compelling case? Can they come up with an actual plan that includes how much this is going to cost people and how to get it done? That all still remains to be seen. I mean, they can talk about it all they want, but, you know, will it remain feasible? And, you know, can they, you know, counterbalance whatever it means to that the Republicans are going to be, quote unquote, the health care party? Is that what Trump said? So,
Go ahead.
Well, I just think 2018, the midterms, and a lot of polling suggests that Democrats do really well and are on really strong footing when they're talking about health care. Mm-hmm. And they're on sand and in a weaker position when they're focusing on Russia or impeachment or all those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. So to the extent that they're going to focus on health care, I think they're making a smart strategic decision. I mean, I think that's talking about issues that actually affect people's lives is the way to go into 2020.
Yeah, I think they should have been talking about healthcare all along, and this just gives them an opportunity to ramp up that conversation. I think even without having an idea about what the next version of healthcare looks like, they certainly have a good talking point now, which is the Republicans now are officially on record for wanting to take away your healthcare, so they can at least be the party that wants to defend keeping what you have right now, which there's something to be said for, because it's the polls show that generally Americans are reasonably happy with the healthcare system. They obviously want more and they have complaints, but losing what they have would be a terrifying situation. I have suspicions that this whole concept about Trump now wanting to talk about just eliminating the ACL together is really more an attempt to change the narrative away from the Mueller report and the Russia investigations and all the other things that are going on about trying to get the report released that he probably doesn't want out there. So I have suspicions that this is really has ulterior motives and really has nothing to do with healthcare.
Well,
I think you could argue that a different way, though. You could also argue that he had one of his best
finest hours,
and then once again he's stepping on his own good news, right?
Which he does all the time,
right and to the great frustration of the people around him and Republicans
and, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I agree with that, and I think he still attacks it as Obamacare, and you have Obama kind of stepping into this conversation, advising Democrats to focus on what they know and to let go of this rhetoric around talking about impeachment and things. So I think there's a lot of strategies at play.
Speaking of rhetoric, the president said yesterday, as he was talking to reporters before lunch, let me tell you exactly what my message is. The Republican Party will soon be known as the party of health care. You watch. So what is that plan?
Well, the only way I can vision this making any sense right now, and I'm sure it won't work out this way, but there is a way of looking at this where in the long view, the idea of single-payer health care, universal health care, some version of that, could all of a sudden land in the laps of the Republican Party as a solution, or at least one that the president might support someday. Because there is no other alternative being talked about. There is no other alternatives on the table. So I can see the table sort of spinning in a strange direction to the benefit of the Democrats and to the benefit of single payer health care when this is all over.
But can they do it though within the time frame that we're looking at? So I mean, you've got a year, right?
Well, they certainly can't do single payer health care. I mean, that's
absolutely
a massive undertaking.
So what's the new messaging on either side?
Well, unless they have some sort of grand plan, but yeah, I mean, you can't get a grand plan through this late in the game, especially when you don't control Congress. Assuming the Democrats wouldn't go along with it. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, and
who knows what to make of that?
But I'm sorry, Jen.
Go ahead. I was gonna say too that if you look at what people are talking about right now, it's sort of unrelated, or they're going to have to go into territory that I don't think either side is really prepared to battle with, which is the nature of health plans themselves. So, if you look at the current marketplace plans, they're kind of skimpy. That you get like the bare minimum sort of covered. If you look at what, we have several companies in our area right now that are looking at union negotiations and strikes, and one of the top things that they're negotiating is healthcare and for better healthcare plans. And that has to do with the insurers themselves, and who is willing to go up to battle against that too.
The really amazing part of this whole thing is that it once again points out that this president has a unique ability to constantly control the message on a daily basis and change the message on a daily basis.
Yeah.
And every politician in this country right now is challenged every minute of their lives to find a way to get around and above and beyond whatever the topic is of the day that the president is talking about.
Well, that's absolutely true. I mean, that was the theme of the campaign, both in the Republican primary and in the general election. I mean, he just sucks up so much attention, and a lot of times it works to his benefit. But I think in this case, it probably isn't working to his benefit. I mean, I think most Republican strategists would have said, let's take a week and just bask in the glow of the Mueller report and just let that sink in. Let the people. And instead, he's kind of changing the subject really rapidly.
Mm-hmm. Unless being skeptical, he knows at the end of the day that really wasn't a win for him. Because are things in the report that when it comes out, it will hurt him. And he's trying to change that narrative.
If that's true, then that's not gonna make a difference when the report does come out, right? I mean, by then this will all be forgotten. And everybody will be focusing on the Mueller reporting.
Yeah, who knows? But I think changing the narrative could be part of this, and I think it's effective right now. At least we're talking about healthcare right now.
So how do the Democrats seize on this moment?
Well, I think they're doing the right thing now. I mean, they are seizing on it. Every headline reads that every leader in the Democratic Party is saying now is the time to jump on health care and make it the number one priority.
But I think there's also a counter. There are counter narratives, you know, around impeachment and people who still insist on collusion. I think we're going to probably talk about that in a little bit. But I mean, if that's a unified voice, that's probably good for the Democrats. But I kind of doubt that it will be.
And I think that's the challenge, though. Can they maintain that elevated status of this issue while taking in whatever will come down the pipeline with the status of the report itself and whether it will become public in the next week or so as they've demanded?
Well, it's challenging because at the same time you have the Republicans building a constant drumbeat attack, trying to make this concept of a Green New Deal and AOC be the real boogeyman issues of the upcoming election. And they're going to keep pounding away on that, so it requires some defense on the part of those who support that concept while you're also trying to promote health care. So it does get very complicated very quickly.
I think that the biggest way to appeal this, though, is to really make it, message it from a consumer standpoint. I mean, if you ask people to really look at like what they're paying for their health bills right now, especially with some of the biggest crises that we have in this country, things that were brought up during the State of the Union, like the cost of cancer, the cost of opioids, the cost of AIDS, and then you have the controversy still of under the issue of healthcare about, maternity, women's health, Planned Parenthood and things like that, which are all healthcare issues. And I think that's going to mobilize people to, challenge both parties to make a stance on these things because they are mobilizing issues. We've seen that already.
When you think about where we are as far as you had mentioned this, Terry, the polls say that people, for the most part, like what they have. There's certainly been no overt advertising to say this is Obamacare, this is the Affordable Care Act, sign up, but people are finding it anyway. And there is an opportunity to make whatever system we have now better. But this just seems to be a fight for fight's sake. Does anyone here think that anything meaningful will come out of it?
Not this year.
Skeptical.
No. I mean, we the first 2 years of the Trump administration, when they had a Republican House and a Republican Senate and a Republican president, nothing happened. So I can only assume with a Democratic House, probably nothing will happen.
Well, it's so difficult, too, because changes to health care are almost always unpopular. I mean, Obamacare was deeply unpopular when it was being proposed and enacted. And then now it's very popular. Like, nothing causes anxiety, I think, more than the thought that your healthcare plan may go away or may change in some drastic way. So I think whenever it's really politically risky to propose anything like, single payer necessarily, if people are worried that, well, the private plan that I have now, the public option I get may not be as good as the private plan I have now. And, polls show that most people are pretty happy with their health care.
It's clear that the Republican Party as a whole did not get together and come up with this grand plan of, all right, we're going to make our number one priority now, eliminating all health care. We're going to do that today. It's clear that didn't happen. What's clear that happened is one day the president woke up and he talked to his Justice Department and said, we're going to do this. And so they're doing it from the executive and justice side, but the legislative side of our government does not really seem to be into this. And so I don't think anything's really going to happen at the end of the day.
I mean, part of the story is that it was a surprise to the Republicans. So, if you're a Republican lawmaker and you think you have you touched on this a moment ago, Chris, and you think you have your issues and you think you have your game plan, surprise.
Right. And that happens to them all the time.
Right.
Right. I mean, that's been the theme for 2 years now.
Mm-hmm. And you don't typically try to eliminate one thing without having a plan of what you replace it with. I mean, even the Republicans know that. And what the president is trying to do is trying to eliminate something and having nothing to replace it with, which is incredibly dangerous for everyone involved.
When so we think when we look at this right now, as far as the total scrapping of the healthcare plan and just of that, great that we're having the conversation. Good that Democrats can use this as an issue and can talk about it. But we assume that as it stands now, this will wind its way through the courts, yes?
It kind of has to.
Yeah.
That's the only place where any real action can happen right now, I think.
And even that.
And maybe that, maybe not then. Well, I mean, this whole thing is coming up because of an appeal that's in the Fifth Circuit Court. So that's sort of what prompted this whole thing. And the Justice Department had to decide how to respond to this appeal. Do they support it, not support it? And they've decided that they want to support the district judge's ruling, which is essentially to make the ACA unconstitutional.
And we've already had a Supreme Court ruling on this, too, so I don't really even know where this goes. You know, the Supreme Court has already said that it's constitutional. Mm-hmm.
Right.
So what's the end game? I don't know. Mm-hmm.
This is a statement. I want to get this right. Amy Walter is national editor of the Cook Political Report. If you're a Republican thinking about 2020 right now, you want to be on offense on health care, not defense. The only way to do that is to make the focus on what Democrats want to do on Medicare for All rather than making it on what the president and the White House are suggesting.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think that's right.
And what about where all of a sudden the voices of the 20-something presidential Democratic candidates, where are they all of a sudden? Their voices sort of been really diminished, too, over the last week or so. All of them were talking about health care to some degree. Mm-hmm. Certainly Bernie Sanders is like his number one issue. So this is another opportunity for them to sort of hone their message on health care as well.
And figure out what to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, some of them have a plan. I mean, Bernie Sanders has a plan. Some of the other ones have a plan. Mm-hmm. Some of the other ones are kind of on the fence about a plan. Mm-hmm.
And we've seen that before. You know, anytime Mitch McConnell was asked about health care, you know, he just, you know, again said, you know, we're going to take care of it. And then we never really saw any shift or change or any strong proposal come out of that party. And again, in this turnaround time, anything that they'll come up with is going to be really surprising me, unless they think that they have an advantage of it going through the courts.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. We'll talk about obstruction. We'll talk about collusion. We'll talk about Adam Schiff. All those good issues coming up. We will talk about Jussie Smollett as well. We welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org. Jen Smith is here. Terry Gibson and Chris Churchill. We will be back after this short break. As Jack Parr used to say, I kid you not, there are secret handshakes going on in the studio.
Secret hand signals.
Okay. Hand signals, is that what that was? All right. I don't know. Jen and I felt left out. Yeah. I know that. But you kids keep going.
We were looking at our alma mater's hand signals.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Both went to Texas colleges.
Yes,
is that the,
that's right.
the through line there? Yes.
They don't work very well on radio.
Right.
But.
For those of you watching on video.
All right. Well, we have letters. We got a lot of them, and we'll get to as many as we can here. We welcome your letters as well. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. Tom writes in and says, I think Trump is going to let the Democrats solve the health care issue and then take credit for it. His constituents won't know the difference because they don't pay enough attention to the everyday news. Lisa writes, I want to see the Dems go after Trump, but stay decent in 2020. Bring up all his garbage. John Barron, Howard Stern interviews, lie after lie, cheating on his wives, mafia dealings, bankruptcies, failed casinos, etc. Show climate change disasters on TV commercials and online ads. I don't want to see failure snatched out of the hand of victory, which is what Democrats have been great at in the past.
Well, I mean, isn't that kind of what Hillary Clinton did, though? And it didn't work out all that well. I mean, I think the,
like, you appeal to common sense.
Well, you talk all so much about him, you don't talk about what you want to do. You know, mm-hmm. I think that's a mistake that she made. I think if her TV commercials, so much of what she put forward was about how awful he was.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. The only difference between now and
now
then, he has a record.
Right. So mm-hmm. run on the record. You don't have to run on the Howard Stern interviews.
Right.
Right.
I mean, good point.
All the things that he had done prior to being president, which were all awful, as the writer pointed out, seemed to have gotten him elected. So I think going back to those same issues is maybe not an effective strategy.
Joel writes, it is not only Obamacare that Trump wants to destroy. It's everything Obama did. He has been destroying global alliances. He's been destroying environmental regulations. He's been destroying women's rights, LGBT rights, voting rights. He has a vendetta against Obama ever since Obama ridiculed him at the White House press dinner. Trump will not rest until all traces of Obama's 8 years in office have been erased. He must not, under any circumstances, be reelected, says Joel. Kevin checks in and says, doesn't the proposal to not defend the law allow the administration to cherry-pick which laws it will allow the Justice Department to uphold or not? Outrageous, say Kevin and Sandy. Can they pick and choose?
I think that's a fear, but I don't know if that's a reality.
John writes that President Trump is not just planning to eliminate Obamacare, but to repeal and replace, So it's entirely Democratic rhetoric to say that he is just dumping 20 million people. People want plans that can customize, and the current law doesn't allow that. And yes, you can get a grand plan through the Democratic Congress if Obamacare is first dumped. Okay, but doesn't it make more sense to have a backup plan, have another plan in place?
Right.
Before
if
you
you're
going to
repeal, replace with what?
Right.
If
you just the second part of that.
If
yes.
you just repeal, I mean, that goes back to the anxiety I was talking about earlier. If you just repeal, that makes obviously people very nervous and frightened because something's disappearing without any sort of, no one knows what the replacement will be or if there will even be one.
And people are, I mean, yeah, that's the thing too. I mean, and how much is it going to cost them? I mean, people are still paying a lot for health insurance these days.
But that's not the way this president works. It never has been and never will be. He's a bull in a china shop when it comes to the legislative process, and he's going to do it in a non-traditional way.
Right. Very, very rarely are there any plans in place that we can look at and, and discuss calmly and rationally. And,
say, oh, that was good.
Yeah. This needs some tweaking here, and this needs this there.
Let's put our teeth into this and really get to the bottom.
Unless it's a cheeseburger.
Right. Ellen says, I have no doubt that Trump's latest decision to end Obamacare has to do with his revenge against John McCain, who didn't support Trump's first attempt to end Obamacare. Trump's pettiness has no bounds. Well, I think he was headed in that direction before John McCain came on his radar, but maybe it doesn't hurt. I don't know. Jim says, if the Democratic plan is socialism, the Democrats need to ask Republicans over and over what the Republican private sector plan is. We are eager to debate. What's your plan? Let's see what the CBO thinks of both plans. But you have no plan, so let's go. We're all ears. That from Jim?
Well, I would probably take some issue with the fact that saying that the Democrats' plan is socialism. I don't really think that that's a consensus amongst the Democratic Party at all.
I think that is the Republican label they are giving.
Yeah.
I think that is what
absolutely. Well, if that's what the writer meant, I apologize. Certainly, that is the mailer and the TV commercial that every candidate running will be facing. And the attack is socialism.
Mike says, to me, this is a sick conniving plan by the White House. Trump and the GOP are not defending the ACA in courts, and their hope of ending it are going to propose a plan that will not be feasible to Democrats, such as allowing junk plan, eliminating pre-existing conditions, etc. Trump will sell it as the greatest health care plan ever, and that 45% that think he's doing a good job will believe him. When the Democratic House refuses to vote for such a plan, Trump will place the blame on Democrats for failing to provide the American people with the greatest health care plan ever and use that one as the issues to attack Democrats in the 2020 elections.
If we could just game everything out like this and have some sense that we were, you know, accurate about it, it could be really helpful. So I would love to have that skill to be able to do that. Who wouldn't? Who knows what's going to happen?
Julie says the discussion is surreal. Chaos is the end game, folks. Of course, the GOP didn't have a plan to eliminate ACA. Trump is moving on the GOP like a, well, you know, he told us he would, because when you're a star, they let you. He told us that. This is Putin's plan, yet the destruction of norms and trust, trying my best to hang on. That from Julian Sertog.
When you look back at what Trump actually campaigned on, though, he was far less aggressive about Obamacare than a lot of the other Republican candidates were. I mean, his thing was he wanted to keep a lot of it in place and promised he wouldn't touch Medicare and Medicaid. And you know, so I don't, as far as his base goes, I don't think changes to healthcare are going to be real popular with his base. I mean, I think that's actually something that could erode his base more than anything. A lot of those people are really dependent on programs like Medicare. You know. So
I agree with everything you just said, except the one thing is that I think Trump always needs to have that one issue or that one person to vilify, and he's kind of running out of things. You know, he's just kind of running out of issues. So I think he's sort of reaching for this one now to see how it plays. Mm.
I don't know. He's got the whole Mueller investigation.
I think he's trying to avoid that. Yeah. I think he's now running from that. I really think he wants to put that aside.
Okay, so let's talk about the Mueller investigation through the eyes of Representative Adam Schiff, the Democrat from the state of California. He is the House Intelligence Committee chairman, and President Trump, emboldened by the special counsel's determination that he was not part of a criminal conspiracy to sway the 2016 election, has an early target as he seeks recompense from his critics. Representative Adam Schiff, who maintains he's seen evidence, he's seen it, that Trump colluded with Russia. Over the past 2 years, Schiff, who now chairs the House Intelligence Committee, has emerged as a public foil to Trump and his supporters. He has delivered scathing takedowns of Trump for calling Mueller's probe a witch hunt, and he offered similar criticism of Trump's congressional allies, now leading a charge to depose Schiff as chairman on the grounds that his bias against the president makes him unfit to lead. Yet even as House Democrats make a clear pivot away from the collusion question, they continue to rally around Schiff, who refuses to let the matter go until lawmakers can assess the investigative materials that informed Mueller's findings. Schiff said in an interview this week, "Undoubtedly, there is collusion." This was after Attorney General William Barr submitted a 4-page letter to Congress summarizing key aspects of Mueller's report. He went on to say, "We will continue to investigate the counterintelligence issues. This is the president or people around him compromised in any way by a hostile foreign power? It doesn't appear that was any part of Mueller's report."
Well, you know, we have to get this report. And I think that as the chair of the Intelligence Committee, he is the person above all people that has the responsibility to keep this issue alive and to make sure that we get the real information so that the real facts can be determined in Congress, which has the constitutional authority to come up with its own conclusions and do its own research and its own investigation. So I think he's right to continue to pound this away. He's also in a very safe seat. He comes from an overwhelmingly Democratic state. I think the balance is that we want to make sure his message doesn't override the bigger message of things like health care.
I think he's making a big mistake. I mean, I think Democrats at this point should let the collusion thing go. And if we see the full Mueller report, which we will, if we see it and there's something there, then okay, revive it at that point. But Mueller was pretty clear about collusion and
but you haven't read the report, so it's hard to say how clear he was. That's the real dilemma we have.
The quote that everyone's pointing to, and it's a direct quote from his report, is that the investigation did not establish that members of the Trump campaign conspired or coordinated with Russia. I mean, that he can't really be any more direct than that.
But there could be other quotes in the report that could be very helpful.
But I mean, that's pretty...
But it's still, I mean, I think as the head of the Intelligence Committee, you want to see the entire report and you want to come to these conclusions on your own, because that's what you're actually sworn to do. So I think it's...
Sure, and we will, but it doesn't make sense to me that Barr would mischaracterize the report only to have it come out 3 weeks later and look like a fool. Mueller didn't find collusion. I think that's the overriding important thing to recognize, and I think Democrats have to. Mm-hmm. I think more than ever it's important that one party be the party of facts and not the party of conspiracy theories. And mm-hmm. continuing to say that Trump is a Russian agent or that there was collusion, I just think
I'd rather see Schiff focus on the bigger issues that have surrounded this case, like cybersecurity, you know, in terms of intelligence and in terms of what's going on. We've had so many national and private sector data breaches that have affected our country. We've got a census coming up. We've still not heard very much conversation on how that's going to be secured. And we still have a lot of other, you know, micro issues involved in that. We're talking, you know, on our list to talk about later is looking at Puerto Rico and FEMA data. We just had a massive FEMA data breach of people who were affected by the Texas hurricane, where their information was out there. That's a problem in our country. And so if you're going to you know, as Intelligence Committee, go after some issues, which include, you know, how our polls may have been hacked and stuff like that. Look at the bigger issue of cybersecurity.
Well, I think you're kind of alluding to a point that I think needs to be made, too, which is that this obsessive focus on Russia has meant that a lot of things haven't been covered, like the FEMA data breach that you just mentioned. I mean, if you turn on MSNBC every night, that's all they've been talking about for 2 years. Mm-hmm. And it's time to move on, I think. I mean, we were told that Mueller was really going to deliver something that was going to be a knockout blow, and it obviously didn't happen. Mm-hmm. And we have no reason to suspect that he found something and isn't telling us about it. So,
we do have reason. I mean, we don't have any reason to really know anything because we don't have the report. So, I think there could be a lot of facts in that report.
That sentence I read, though, is pretty definitive.
But that's one sentence that's been cherry picked by one person. So, I think that the American public has a right to see all of the quotes.
I think we will.
Well, I'm not so sure about that. I'm not so sure we're going to ever really see the whole report. And I think part of what Adam is trying to do, a Congressman Schiff, is trying to do is to make sure that we do get our hands on our report.
And I think I'd rather see him do his due diligence, though, in making sure that report becomes public in a timely fashion and that it does come out within weeks and not months. I think, again, you know, in terms of looking at other issues and other things that were supposed to be promised, we heard, you know, Congressman Neal, for example, saying they weren't going, that his committee wasn't going to go after Trump until this report was out. Well, now the report is out. What will happen next? Will they pursue the tax records? Will they pursue litigation in that respect? That's something I'm curious. And I'd rather see a proactive stance versus just like retroactively, continuously, you know, going through these files. If the report is meant to be public, we will see that information. And I think that there are other demands that should be made now moving henceforth to keep some of the issues moving forward instead of this rhetoric of the same accusations that we've been hearing for like 2 years now.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue. We have much more to discuss, and we will do so. We also welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. We have Jen Smith, Terry Gibson, and Chris Churchill with us this morning making up the panel. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. And we welcome your letters. All right, let's move on. We'll go to other stories and other things that are making the news on this Wednesday morning. So let us talk about Jussie Smollett for a few moments. This is, I think it's weird. I'll go with that. I think it's weird. This is a case that, I mean, we can talk about, obviously, people saying there's far bigger stories in the world, and I agree with you, but this is an odd story. You'll remember this young man, an actor from the television program Empire, reported a very serious, horrific hate crime attack. Then it was, through investigation, believed that he staged the attack against himself. Charges were filed. He was released on $10,000 bond. And yesterday, all the charges were dropped. That made the mayor of Chicago mad. That made the
police, his head almost popped off.
I'm not sure. I think made Jell-O may do that for Rahm Emanuel, but sure. Okay, we'll give him that. Yeah. He seems to be a little hair trigger, but anyway, and also the police department. The police chief was the guy who went on Good Morning America and said, "Look, we were duped here. This is horrible. Look what happened. This is what we found in our investigation." The case has been sealed. We don't know what went on. It was a very hastily convened hearing, and then they slammed the door on a case that has become, yes, a national fascination and a flashpoint with overtones of racial and political discord in a city, Chicago, Illinois, that has a history of tension over law enforcement, and certainly they didn't need anything else to add to their trouble list.
Yeah.
I don't even know where to start. There's, to be honest with you.
It does raise a lot. I mean, if I were a resident of Chicago, I think I'd have a lot of questions. I mean, first of all, from just like a civil rights standpoint, like why did this case get so much attention and action when literally hundreds of people have been killed there? And yet somehow the police department is embroiled over this particular case.
Well, they're responding to the media attention.
Well, absolutely.
Right? I mean, he's a famous
boggles
guy.
My mind.
Yeah.
So,
maybe
like,
the police department shouldn't do that, but that's it's easy for us to say,
and,
I guess.
And yeah. So, like, I mean, I'd be really ticked off. But I, again, I think it does raise some weird issues about due process and, you know, just like how things are being run. And you know, the bottom end is just, why? Like,
so the district attorney, or whatever they call the district attorney, and
the state's attorney.
Okay, so the state's attorney was clear. I mean, in a statement, said that he was not exonerated, and said that and implied that this was more about them just having bigger fish to fry. Essentially, mm-hmm. that there are a lot of more important cases, which I don't doubt for a second is true in Chicago. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, the violence alone. The only thing that would worry me is if he got special treatment because he is a celebrity. Mm-hmm. And the only way to really know that is to see how they've handled previous cases in Chicago that are similar to this, and I have no idea how
they've
done that.
So why did he seal the case?
I don't know.
Well, that's a particularly troubling point to me, that means that there's something to hide, that there's something that does not want to be public.
We had a similar case in Albany, and with UAlbany students who claimed that they were attacked in a
right.
city bus.
Correct.
They were punished much more harshly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they went to trial, and a judge, I think it was 200 hours of community service, their 3 years probation.
Hmm. Small, I mean, did if, like two.
Yeah, 2 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean,
which they originally said was not an agreement, and then but they, because the first draft of it was that the $10,000 that he put up for bond would normally, when charges are dropped, would be returned to him, and then they made it sound like he was going to donate that back for the time that they had spent on the case. Then it appears that there was that the $10,000 was the payment. The settlement, if you will, and then also the community service, and that I don't understand either.
No. Yeah, it doesn't make much sense.
But then they also said that this doesn't exonerate him, which confused me even more. Because mm-hmm. if it doesn't exonerate him, then what does it do?
Well, I also
well, yeah, exactly.
Or does that leave us?
And we should know he certainly says right. that it exonerates
yeah.
him.
But yeah, if they had come out and said that the evidence doesn't support the charges, that would be one thing.
Right.
But they didn't say that at all.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's like sort of a halfway sort of limbo.
And that's why it's sort of it inclines one to think along the lines of Chris's thinking, that there was special treatment given. You know, they've got this money as sort of a settlement or what have you, and, you know, case closed, let's all move on. But I think it is a detriment to, you know, the process of justice for everyone else.
Meanwhile, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the FBI, was also investigating the fact that he had sent himself a threatening letter.
And they're still investigating
that. And they are still investigating that. So there's a possibility we haven't heard the end of it,
mm-hmm.
but they are not commenting.
I mean, I suppose it's possible that within the investigative judicial process in Chicago, they have found some places where they have made some mistakes, and they don't want to be embarrassed, and so they're trying to make this go away. I don't know.
Then why put the charges up in the first
place?
That's
a good question. It's a good question.
The police chief was pretty definitive. I mean, he isn't. I mean, mm-hmm. that's what police chiefs tend to do. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's,
and there's so many, you know, the issues around this are so, you know, just really important issues. We have, you know, racial issues and issues against the LGBT community and hate crimes, and, you know, and that this is all
Trump
apparently faked, and the whole Trump thing. I mean, it's, there's a lot of hot issues here.
To be honest, the story sounded kind of ridiculous from the get-go. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It sounded like something somebody had made up. And that doesn't necessarily mean that it was, but I think a lot of people were skeptical right from the get-go, including a lot of the reporters in Chicago.
And if he wasn't a celebrity, this and I kind of question.
Celebrity,
I
never,
really question
barely
exactly
would have
a
heard
celebrity
of it.
Anyway.
Right.
But yeah. If he wasn't a so-called
like
quote, celebrity,
yeah, I'd never heard of him before.
I'd never heard of him.
Right? I mean, I'm not sure how much of a celebrity
the
he's
tons
a celebrity
of Empire now. Fans right. would disagree, but
well, I knew. Like once they said, "Oh, he's that guy at Empire," I knew. But other than that, I didn't know.
But I think you know the other fair point. When NPR was talking about this earlier this morning, I think that a commentator from the In a Minute show who said that it was also the media's due diligence to take a step back and say, like, "Whoa, my Spidey sense is saying this is a really weird story."
When the reporters in Chicago did do
and
that.
They exactly did that. Yeah. And I mean, I've been reading the Chicago Tribune coverage primarily just to get a sense of how this all unraveled. But, you know, again, taking a step back and not just, you know, taking the TMZ approach to the
right.
issue and just saying, OK, what are the facts? Pump the brakes. What do we really need to know? What questions really need to be asked here? And to put it in an appropriate context, too.
One thing about the celebrity thing, cases like this tend to get a lot of attention, whether the victim is a celebrity or not. The students in Albany were not celebrities, and that case got mm-hmm. national attention. So it may not have gotten quite as much, but it may still have been a national story.
I agree. Mm-hmm. And also, but you know what gets you more attention? When you drop all the charges.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, I mean, if you have a court appearance, it's like, okay, that probably wouldn't have been, you know, hardly covered. And mm-hmm. you just go through the machinations of the court process. Mm-hmm. You drop the charges, you're putting a huge spotlight on
right.
on the city of Chicago.
But, mm-hmm. you know,
especially with so little explanation.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I'm sure somebody's going to write in and say this because, you know, the sad thing here is that the spotlight for both the media and the American public should just be in so many other places right now. There are mm-hmm. so many other awful things happening in our country that so much attention going to this one individual about this one issue is really problematic, I think.
And also when cases are faked, I mean, assuming that this isn't real, it does so much damage to people who do have real claims. The next mm-hmm. person who comes along in Chicago and says that they were, you know, harassed because they were gay or black or whatever, people can be like, "Oh yeah, sure, okay, we've heard this story mm-hmm. before."
And I think that's true. The precedence that, and that's why this is detrimental to, you know, the justice process is because I mean, look at how many cases,
and in
Chicago particularly. I mean, there's been such a hard fight already just to, you know, say, you know, is a police force, you know, wrongfully harassing certain people? Are they profiling certain people a certain way? And then to have, again, so much attention be putting on this one isolated case where we've had, like, literally cases where people have not just been jumped but have died. And where is they're still clamoring for justice. And then this case gets open and shut so quickly.
All right, let's take a break. We'll allow you to compose your thoughts and write us a letter. panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Ray Graff is in the studio adjacent to us, ready to deliver the news. We'll get to that right after this. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel. As we continue on this morning, we have Jen Smith, Terry Gibson, and Chris Churchill on our program this morning. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org. We have quite a few. We'll get through to them. Kay writes, "I can't believe the constant vilification of Russia and Donald Trump fueled largely by speculation." And it continues. "Obviously, nothing the state says, bar summary of the report, etc., can be trusted without proof, but the media-generated and Congress-generated hysteria on this topic is horrifying and exhausting. Why does the panel continue to add to this? Rather than owning up to the warmongering and fearmongering in which it has been engaged regarding this issue for the last 2 years, how can panel members, Jen this morning, lament all the time spent covering Russia without looking at the massive volume of coverage that Roundtable has provided on the issue?"
Because it's an issue. There is literally legitimately found sources of malicious software that Russia devised to infiltrate not only our country's, you know, backends of systems, but other countries too. That's well documented.
Yeah, I do agree to the point, and I think I kind of tried to make some of those points earlier, but I do agree that there is that a lot of this went too far and too many people drew too many conclusions too quickly. and that there was almost an element of bigotry to some of it. You know, any touch of Russia whatsoever, like, it was McCarthyism, really. If you had any link to Russia, you were somehow demonized. You know, Jill Stein, people like that who but it's not. But I also will defend the media coverage a little bit, in that if you have this investigation going on, it's obviously a huge deal. You can't just say, well, we won't talk about it until the report comes out.
I have three things to say about it. One is that, let's not forget, the person who was screaming every single solitary day about it and making it a story was the President of the United States.
That's partly it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, talk about stirring the pot. So I don't think that should go unmentioned. Also, as far as the our coverage on this program and the media in general, to Jen's point, if you're looking at Russia infiltrating our election, and we brought this up yesterday, with little or nothing being done about that, we know that they had an influence on or tried to influence the election in 2016. We know they tried to influence the Brexit vote. They continue to try to do that. So, isn't that part of the story?
It is part of the story.
There are different ways of covering it.
That is part of the story, but part of that story should also be that we do the same thing in every country all over the world, mm-hmm. too, and nobody ever talks about that. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, if we're going to act like our elections are some sort of sacrosanct thing that no other country is allowed to influence, obviously I'm not defending what Russia did. It was wrong, but we do the same thing, mm-hmm. and that's never been part of this coverage.
I think it's just a matter of how all of these issues, which are very different, get lumped into one issue, which is Russia. And I do think it's important to separate them. Long before the Mueller investigation even started, we already had verified evidence from all the various security and intelligence agencies in the country that Russia had definitely tried to interfere in our elections.
As it was happening,
and the Mueller report confirms that.
And the Mueller report. So that's one issue, and that needs to be dealt with. And that, you know, the American public deserves to have the facts on that. The separate issue is how much the president did or did not know about this or colluded with them. That's a separate issue, and the two get mixed together, unfortunately.
But and it is true that there have been a lot of wild claims made about, you know, the president being a spy or a Russian agent, or and people connecting dots where maybe they shouldn't have been connecting them. And I think the letter writer is getting at that a little bit. I mean, there was, not to use the president's language, but there was a little bit of a witch hunt or just a kind of a wild conspiracy element to this.
Okay. Let me just, I know we're all cynical journalists here in this room, but if you have the stake of the concern about Russia infiltrating our elections, okay. And then you have, And sure, maybe this not is a biased adjective, but I'll use it anyway. A coziness between the president of the United States and the Russian president, that seems a little odd. The fact that you have conversations that go off the record, that seems a little odd. The coziness with dictators in general,
right?
Seems
well, that's what I was going to say.
That's what I was going to say.
The coziness with Putin is odd, but again, he's cozy with every dictator.
Mm-hmm. This is what causes these controversies. That
exactly.
We don't have a president that will step up and speak out in defense of our country when we're under attack by others. And if he had come out from the very beginning and called out Russia for interfering with our elections and really made an aggressive approach towards that, then a lot of the things we're talking about now wouldn't have existed. But he doesn't do that.
And if he was a disgrace in Helsinki, you know, there have been times when you thought, God, does Putin have something on him? But there are also a lot of ways in which the administration has been very aggressive toward Russia. Mm-hmm. So I feel kind of like it's been cherry picked a little bit, where people are seeing the evidence they want to see and they're ignoring stuff that goes contrary to the conspiracy theory that everybody wants to love and embrace.
Mm-hmm. I understand what you're saying. I just have I have a hard time because I think hindsight's 20/20. We're spending time in the show where the case is, or the issue is, the story is that Paul Manafort has been indicted.
Right.
Russian agents have been indicted. Okay. Well, I mean, we're going to cover that, and that's part of an investigation.
And I'm not necessarily criticizing the volume of coverage,
but
yeah, it's when a special counsel is investigating whether or not the president has colluded with a foreign country, that's obviously a huge story. You know, it just feels like too many eggs have been put into this basket, maybe.
I respect Kate's point of view, and I think it's a good one. I just, when she says we spend so much time, I think you're right. I think we all spend too much time, but I don't know that that necessarily is a bad thing. I think we're investigating. We had concerns. And looking back on it, I think we had reason for concerns. And if it's done, it's done, and we move on.
The counter, another argument too, which we've already made, is just how many other things weren't talked about because of the obsessive focus on this. And not just on this program, but, you know, how many investigative reporters were chasing this story when they could have been looking at a lot of other things
but
that Trump is doing.
I can't tell you. I mean, that's throughout history. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've interviewed authors of books about some horrible thing that happened in history, and you're like, oh, well, why wasn't that reported? Oh, well, that was the week that Chernobyl happened, and it took it right off the pages.
Right.
I mean, so we always have that.
Right, but Chernobyl turned out to be real, and this is turning out not to be real. I mean, I guess that would be the key distinction.
Well, what's not real about it? I mean, I think it's very real.
Well, he
real.
Found that there was no collusion, right?
Well,
that,
the investigation is still investigation.
You know, that's one, right. That's one piece of the Russian puzzle, but there's a much bigger puzzle that has other pieces that were very much verified as being real problems, real concerns. So, you know, again, it always gets kind of lumped into a hole, and that's why I think, you know, a lot of these controversies erupt. We need to keep these things separate. And I think there is a real significant Russian issue, certainly in terms of the threat they pose to our national security. The president's position on that, I think, is separate. And if he would take a stronger position one way or the other, then I think some of these issues would decrease.
All right, let's go to the letters. We have this one from, I just want to put these in order. So these are the Jesse Smollett author letters. Jamie says, acquittal in contemplation of dismissal is not unusual in this matter. He had no priors, and such disposition just gives a person a chance to put it behind themselves. Behave for whatever period of time, generally a year, and your record is expunged. More importantly, who cares? But agreed on all of that, except that that isn't exactly how it was worded.
Right. And like I said, if this is consistent with how they handled this type of thing in Chicago, then I don't really have a problem with it. It's just if this is somehow abnormal, if there's an indication that he received some sort of special treatment, I think that's where it should bother people.
George writes and says, this is a department that committed acts of torture. See the case of Police Commander John Burge, who was convicted of that. Lied about an officer who shot a man in the back 16 times and have committed many other crimes. Talking about the Chicago Police Department having a long history of misconduct. Mm-hmm. DeWitt writes, Jesse Smollett shades of Tawana Brawley all over again. Unsubstantiated claims of abuse and attack. There is always great outrage when someone comes forth with claims, then a slow fizzle when they turn out to be false. Mr. Smollett needs to be charged and prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law for trying to incite race-based hatred. Why are you not rising up to end hatred, or are you trying to extend the attack for some underlying political reason? I think that question was to the
prosecutors.
To the prosecutors and not to us personally. At least I hope that's the case. I don't know what to do. Barbara on healthcare. Trump is such an egomaniac. Let him take credit for a new healthcare plan. Why not just keep the ACA and change the name to Trump Care? The best, most wonderful healthcare plan on all planet Earth. Better than any other president ever created. However we get healthcare, who cares? Roger writes about Adam Schiff. As I asked the other day, one of the House chairmen continuing the pursuit of Trump is Adam Schiff. On many occasions in the last 2 years, Schiff has maintained that he had evidence that Trump and his entourage conspired or colluded with the Russians. Schiff has never produced such evidence, and the Mueller report, after an extensive investigation, now cannot find any. Does the panel believe that Congressman Schiff, whose credibility is surely now damaged, should step down from chairmanship of the Intel Committee and even resign from the House? That would allow a House member without his baggage to lead a more substantial investigation.
Well, look, listen, without the Mueller report actually being made public so we can read it, I don't think it's really fair to say that the report didn't find any evidence. I think what we're going to find when we get this report, if they don't black it out, is that they did find a lot of evidence. They just didn't find enough evidence to point to the fact that there was something they could call official and collusion.
did not establish is the way the right. Mueller report put it. They didn't establish that there was collusion.
It doesn't mean they didn't find anything. And I think we will see that they did find stuff that was very suspicious, but it wasn't enough to mount a legitimate case, as I interpret it. So that's why I think we have to get this report. Otherwise, we're going to continue to have these arguments.
But to go to the letter, I mean, if he does have evidence, and let's see it, you know, to continue, it's, again, when you, I guess my problem is I always am very skeptical of conspiracy theories, and when people keep claiming that some conspiracy theory is true and they know it's true and they never tell us exactly why or they never show us why, then I think we all have a right to be pretty skeptical about that.
Just going back to the letter writer's question, too, of, you know, whether Schiff should step down. I mean, obviously, that's what the Republicans are going to try to depose him. I mean, I don't necessarily... I don't know if it'll make a difference, and then it's who steps up. But I don't think that's likely to happen.
He's not going to step down. There's no reason whatsoever why he should or he would. I mean, he's in an extremely safe seat. I mean, this is not going to hurt him in California. He's not going to step down. It's just a matter of whether he tones down his language and continues to do the work behind the scenes without talking about it, or if he continues to be vocal. If he does have evidence, he may not be able to release it because he's bound by constitutional mandates that he has to keep this information secret. I don't know. These people have all been a part of many closed door hearings, mm-hmm. and they've had mm-hmm. access to a lot of reports that the public hasn't seen. So it is theoretical that they have seen something that they believe is worthy of investigating.
John writes about Trump's approach. How about we stop calling his approach to policymaking non-traditional? That's mealy-mouthed nonsense. A better description is mindlessly destructive. Kevin says it's hard to say if we are in the governmental equivalent of a game of whack-a-mole with Trump popping up with a new pronouncement randomly, or if we are on the governmental equivalent of a Max 8 roller coastering our way to oblivion.
I think the whack-a-mole is good.
Maybe too soon.
Yeah.
Okay. Melissa, on collusion, if you look at the charging documents for Stone in particular, it notes communications between Stone and WikiLeaks at the request of a senior campaign aide. While Wiki is an arm of Russia media, it is not considered the Russian government. The same is true of Manafort sharing internal polling data with Russian officials. There's plenty of colluding and coordinating with Russian intermediary, but not with the actual Russian government. All right, we go to Tom, who says, what I want to know is what the Barr summary did not say. Question number one regarding collusion, did John Jr. commit collusion? Is the Barr summary a cover-up for the president's family?
No. That's my, you know, I don't have, I just don't, I just doubt it. I don't see it.
I personally don't have a lot of reasons to trust this Attorney General Barr, and so I think it might be a stretch to think that he's covering up the whole family, but he does very much seem to be working hand in hand with the president in ways that make me suspicious. So,
yeah, but we heard for so many months that Mueller was just this, you know, impeccable guy, and he was going to really deliver, and he was thorough and this and that, and he delivered his report, and it says there was no, he could not establish collusion. So Barr, to me, is almost irrelevant. I don't think Barr is going to issue a summary of the report that's inaccurate.
Well, it's all about what's accurate. I mean, he's decided what he wants to publish, and he's picked out those quotes. And so those quotes may be accurate, but there's more in the report that we deserve to see. I do think that, who is it that said that Mueller was going to deliver something in particular? Who said that? I think the media said that. You know, the press said that. Various news outlets said that.
Various Democrats said that, too.
Well, yeah. So,
there have been
lots of
predictions.
Everybody
about
is just projecting what they want to happen.
How the Mueller report
right?
was going to change the world.
So,
and yeah.
I mm-hmm. think, you know, I was always cautious, and I think many of us were. Causes that we should not put, you know, unrealistic hopes on this report. Ultimately, you're going to have
to. But I think a lot of people did.
Well, that's the way the humankind works. I mean, you can't stop that from happening.
Stacy writes, two of the panel members are giving Barr and Trump a pass. Barr is going to bury the report. The hope of Republicans is that people like Jen will pacify the rest of us by convincing us that all is good in the land of Trump because AG Barr said so. Are you kidding me? Barr made his position clear before he was even nominated to his current position. And stop saying the Mueller report has not been released. It has been released. It has not. I think we have made that very clear.
Yeah.
But anyway. Mika says, to the panel member who is in such a hurry to move on and claiming McCarthyism, do you know what happened regarding Trump campaign, the Russians, etc.? I know I don't, but I do know that I saw a president's behavior that undermined our democracy, obstructed justice, and cozied up to Russia, a major U.S. adversary, while undermining U.S. intelligence services. The issues that Mueller was investigating are fundamental to our democracy. What could be a more critical, fundamental matter? And by the way, since when has our country been so crippled that we can handle only one or two issues at a time? Leslie says the Russian factor is real and has not been resolved. Bannon wants a white ethnic state, and Putin et al. Are pushing it. This is not a benign issue. Janice says the media did not come up with the Trump's a Russia agent story. That was the Department of Justice. Judy says, why is everyone conceding the point to Trump before we see the full report? Stop spreading the propaganda. And Reed writes, it was the president whom declared he had nothing to do with Russia, while not disclosing he had signed a letter of intent for the largest hotel project in Russia. The coverage was not overblown, and regardless of what the recent synopsis says, the leader of this country has not yet addressed these disturbing discrepancies.
Well, I mean, there's a lot in all those letters, but I mean, just the quote from Mueller is that he did not establish that they conspired or coordinated with Russia. I mean, that's what he was looking into, and he was not able to establish it. If he can't establish it with the massive team that he had and the millions that they spent, to assume that anybody else is going to be able to establish it, I think, is foolhardy. It's not going to happen.
Well, I think when we see the report, and hopefully we will see the report, and if it's not too blacked out where we can actually read it, we're going to see there's a lot of things in there that while maybe they don't qualify as being legitimately illegal, they still qualify as being extremely unethical and unacceptable on the part of the American public. And I think that that is what people will respond to. Things don't have to be illegal for them to be wrong. And the voters are very smart at looking at these types of issues and determining what they will accept as being ethical and what they will not accept. And it doesn't necessarily have to be prosecuted in a court of law.
Right. But I don't think that Mueller was only looking at whether or not there were violations of specific technical laws. I think he was looking into the broader issue of whether or not there was collusion, which obviously is not a legal charge.
But he was looking to see if he could build a legitimate case that could go to court and win and be prosecuted.
Well, and no, I don't know that it had to go to court, actually. I think the case that he was looking to build would have gone to Congress, which it wouldn't necessarily need to be illegal. He was what he was trying to do was establish whether or not there was collusion, and he was unable to do so.
And I think the matter, though, is what happens next. You know,
final 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Mentioned voters. So, you know, does that dissuade anyone? Do polls change? Do, you know, people take things differently, you know, now that this information and this phase of our, you know, national journey has come through?
It helps Trump at least a little bit in the short term.
We need the report.
All right. Keep talking, but we got to go.
We need the report. Release the report.
We'll be back after the... Thanks, everybody. Thanks
Thank
for
you.
Great
Thank
panel.
You.
We'll
you.
Be back.